You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
When I'm calling you, will you answer to? That means I offer my love to you, to be your own. If you refuse me, I will be blue and waiting all along. But if when you hear my love call,
oh my goodness, we just had to use that music. I want to credit my my colleague here, Lee Clark, and Boardman, for coming up with Slim Whitman, the great Slim Whitman. I used to think he was the manufacturer of cigars, but he was not. He was a singer and a yodeler.
It's frying all of our electronic equipment.
It is.
His voice.
And Lee reminded me that Slim graced the movie Mars Attacks. And it was the only way that our world was able to defeat those dreaded Martians, playing Slim Whitman music all over the world. It was a beautiful experience. Well, good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works. My name is Paul Molloy. I am, by acclamation, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. It is Thursday, February the 20th, and in a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Aloysius Hogan. He is a labor policy expert at the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington. And among other things, we're going to be talking with Aloysius on what happens if we hike the minimum wage to over $10 an hour, which, by the way, is being pushed right now by the Obama administration. Also, the current fate of the Keystone Pipeline. There is news to report. We will talk about that with Aloysius Hogan, and we're going to be listening to the thoughts of Professor Walter Williams a little later in the show on what he calls the concealed evil of socialistic justice, socialism and justice. And finally, what better day to give you the top 10 countries in the world for press freedom? And guess what? You're going to be very surprised about where the United States ranks in that. So stay tuned for that towards the end of our show in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list. And by the way, we come to you here at Freedom Works 3 days a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern Time on the Tan Talk Radio Network. We are here to promote the libertarian perspective, the idea that the more freedom you have, the better, the happier, the better off you're going to be. You know, personal liberty as you were promised in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution. Liberty that we feel has been slowly pulled away from you in Washington. Anyway, we are very happy you're joining us. And if you would like to call in, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a thought or question. Our toll-free number is 866-826-1340. 866-826-1340. Locally, 727-441-3000. And to find out a little bit more about our show and maybe about the libertarian philosophy, you can access our website, thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. Well, lots of things going on today. You know about all of the trouble right now in the Ukraine. Scores of people that have been killed there in a fight over the administration in that country. And here on the home front, we got all kinds of troubles as well. One of the things we've got is water trouble, drought trouble in California. Governor Jerry Brown And top Democratic lawmakers are proposing to spend about $700 million to help drought-stricken communities throughout the Golden State, including $15 million for those with dangerously low drinking water supplies right now. Now, Brown announced the legislative proposal during a news conference yesterday. He called it a call to action as the nation's most populous state is dealing with one of the driest periods on record. Most of the money, about $550 million, is going to come in the form of accelerated spending from two bonds that have been approved by voters. And that will go towards water conservation and recycling efforts. And the general fund will also be tapped. Here's the thing about the drought. The government is partly responsible for the drought, and that's because they decide where the water is going to be diverted. And in so doing, a lot of people have been claiming that they've been unfairly diverting water to different, let's put it this way, to different groups that support their political philosophy. And now you always have to worry about who gets what, right? But there is a claim that way too much water is going to certain groups and certain areas where there's always been this thing between, of course, the farmers and the residents. And the farmers, you know, California, I think, provides more than half the world's food now. So it's very important, obviously, that the farmers in California get enough water. But you also got a problem with residents who need enough water to drink. And this is the problem right now. There has been certainly a drought in California. And so all of these things are working together to cause the kind of trouble that they are currently going through. Well, also, found this to be kind of an interesting situation. This is in Colorado, where a Colorado couple's land is in the process of being purchased against their will by the state to preserve some what they call open space. Now, eminent domain is supposed to be the purchase of private property for the benefit economically or basically for roads and schools and things that have to do with societal needs in the area. But open space, this becomes the interesting issue. The view from the deck of the couple's house was a dream come true for them. Their names are Andy and Seal Berry. They've got a beautiful panorama of mountain peaks towering over the forests which are below them. They purchased a three-bedroom home where they could live in year-round and a 10-acre parcel of land. Now, Colorado, alarmed that they have an ATV that they drive up what used to be an old mining road, want to condemn the property and take it back and make it open space. Well, they got open space all over the place. It's a beautiful vista. And these people are kind of out there on their own. But the county attorney, this is in Summit County, Colorado, said that the county had to act after the Berries insisted on being able to continue to use their motorized ATV to get to their cabin. Well, how are you going to get there otherwise? I suppose you could try a rowboat, but you know, on those gravel mining roads, those rowboats just don't go as fast as they used to. So here we go again with kind of an overreach, in my opinion, by the federal government when it comes to eminent domain. We have started to expand the law. And if you remember, about 5 years ago, there was a case in Connecticut, the name of the case escapes me, where people's land was purchased in Connecticut, not for societal needs like, a thoroughfare, a bridge, whatever, but because they wanted to get more subdivision homes built and so that they could generate more tax revenue. You know, a very indirect way of condemning somebody's property. Anyway, I am looking forward to our conversation in just a couple of minutes with Aloysius Hogan from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about the minimum wage, a little bit about the Keystone Pipeline, a few other things. He's a labor expert. So don't go away. We got Slim for you for just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
Imus in the morning.
Seinfeld actually relayed. He did a little comedy himself. Take a listen to him on parenting.
I am not, you know, a great believer in our style of parenting. What I mean is our generation, you, me, anybody that has kids now, I just think we're too into it.
What do you mean?
We're too into this thing. I don't know how we got so into it. When we were kids, our parents didn't give a damn about us. They didn't even know our names. But when I think of the bedtime routine for my kids is like this royal coronation jubilee centennial of rinsing and plaque and dental appliances and the stuffed animal semicircle of emotional support. And I got to read 8 different moron books. You know what my bedtime books. My bedtime story was when I was a kid? Yeah. Darkness. That is my bedtime story. That's it.
Catch Imus in the morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
No sports drink. No energy bar. No amount of electrolytes. No carbohydrate, vitamin, or protein. Not even 6 days a week in the weight room can give them the energy that you can. The Tampa Bay Lightning beat the Thunder.
Become a Lightning season ticket member to secure playoff priority seating at BeTheThunder.com.
You're listening to the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Thank you so very much for being with us today. We're delighted to have Aloysius Hogan. He is an expert on government affairs, labor policy at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., and brought him on because so many things are going on. And when you're a labor expert, believe me, you keep busy. I mean, if it isn't the Keystone Pipeline and the employment of oil workers, it's the minimum wage, or maybe it's the situation with unions in Tennessee and Volkswagen. So, Aloysius, I don't know where to start, but I do know that just this morning I read that there is some bad news for those of us that think the Keystone Pipeline might be helpful, and that is a judge has struck down a law that was going to allow the pipeline to snake its way through Nebraska. Do you know much about this?
I do, in fact. As a matter of fact, it's a worthy cause. The pipeline is one of those quote-unquote shovel-ready projects that the president said he supports, and it would bring jobs to people in the United States, both in the construction of it and the maintenance and operation of it, and the suppliers and all the restaurants that feed the workers and whatnot up and down. It would be great. It'd be good for our energy supply. And it's the comment period right now on the environmental impact statement, the most recent. They've had so many iterations of the environmental impact statement, supplemental environmental impact statement. It's about the fifth time. And I encourage people to comment in favor of the pipeline. It would be good.
So why did the judge strike this down?
Well, in Nebraska, part of the route, the law, they didn't like the law that allowed it. I really don't know why. But I do. I can.
Well, let me give you. I'll tell you why. I'm gonna because I just found out about this morning. Anyway, a judge yesterday. Apparently, I don't know. Maybe late yesterday, he struck down a law which allows Keystone to proceed through the state. Now, this is a judge in Lancaster County, and she. Stephanie Stacy is her name. She issued a ruling that invalidated the governor's approval of the Nebraska route. She agreed with the argument that a law passed in 2011 improperly allowed the governor to give TransCanada eminent domain powers inside the state. She said the decision should have been made by the Nebraska Public Service Commission, which regulates pipelines and other utilities. Excuse me. So I suspect that the state of Nebraska and the governor, who does want that pipeline, will appeal. Do you think? Do you agree?
That makes sense, you know, and it's a classic tactic to attack the process and not the substance of it, which is part and parcel of the strategy of the left. However, this particular project, it's interesting to note that unions are in favor of the project because it means jobs, and there's a split in the left. It's always interesting to talk about a split in the left between the enviros and the unions. And in this case, the unions support building the project, and they would like to see the jobs.
Yeah, in fact, there was something similar with the coal and the unions for coal miners and the Democratic Party with that situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're very similar. The other issue I thought I'd bring up with you is because the administration, Obama administration, is pushing to raise the minimum wage to over $10 an hour, and you know it's a feel good law. I mean, if you don't think about it, all you think about is some poor guy that's, you know, struggling somewhere, maybe making $8 an hour, and you feel bad for him and his family. And, of course, it's really a perverted situation. It's not hardly ever that situation at all. But here we are going to raise the minimum wage to, I would think, is it $1 or $2 additional? How will that affect those workers at the bottom end of the totem pole, do you think?
The leading federal proposal people are talking about now is to raise it to $10.10 an hour. It's going to hurt the people at the bottom rungs of the economic ladder. And the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, just came out with a report explaining that it could cost half a million jobs. And the reason is when you raise the cost of labor, then you're going to get less of it. It's a simple supply-demand curve as it becomes more expensive.
Why do you think most people are, generally, it's a very easy issue to demonize, right? I mean, you can easily say, well, look at all these people that are being paid this low wage. And look at the rest of the people that are getting more for that kind of effort, you know. And then they point at that. They'll typically point at, like, the Walmarts of the world or, you know, some of those big box stores, and they'll say, you know, these people need more money. And but of course, nobody ever says, well, yeah, you're going to raise the labor rate. You're also going to raise the very products that Walmart carries, right?
That you make two excellent points right there. And you know, it's interesting when you see in the union tactics, number one, against Walmart, the unions are the pawns, actually, in a competition for grocery business, because the leading unionized competitors against Walmart, you know, Walmart has become the leading grocer in the United States.
Right.
And the competitors who are unionized get hire organizers, community organizers, to go in and oppose the building of Walmarts with grocery stores, the super Walmarts, because they don't want the competition, and they use the unions to be fronts. But in fact, what happens is the unions themselves don't even actually end up being fronts. The unions hire people to go out and do the protests. And so you have non-union people who are being paid a minimum wage go out and protest against the likes of that sort of thing. The other thing with the minimum wage is union contracts frequently are pegged to the minimum wage. And after the collective bargaining has occurred and the contract is in place, they can get an automatic pay raise without any further negotiations just by getting the minimum wage increased.
Wow.
So that is another union tactic that people don't see behind the scenes.
Right.
They don't see the motivation with the Walmart attacks, and they don't see the motivation for the minimum wage attacks, but that's what happened.
We're talking with Aloysius Hogan. He is an expert in labor policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. You know, speaking about Walmart, We have a very interesting situation here in Pinellas County, Florida, where we where our show comes from. They've been demonized here by a lot of the liberal press, but all of a sudden, in one of the poorer sections of St. Pete, Florida, a grocery chain moved out in a very critical area where they the people in that area just didn't have access to a good grocery store. Well, guess who moved in and is now being praised even by the liberal press? Walmart. Walmart moved in one of its food stores to that very area where the it was a minority community, and they were begging for somebody to come in because the people needed to get to a grocery store and they didn't have any close by. And Walmart, you know, was the one that did indeed move in. And yet, Walmart is always the one that is being castigated because it, you know, if you believe the protesters, it insults poor people.
You know, you're exactly right. And you know, I should add, I was just in Bradenton, Tampa, Venice, St. Pete over last week and the weekend before last, and enjoyed very much down there.
Good.
You know, that's very true, that Walmart comes in and serves communities, and the reason Walmart succeeds is because people patronize it, and it brings a service and products to people at prices that they can afford and appreciate and want to buy.
Yeah, in fact, we have, before Walmart's food stores started popping up around our area, we had like one major, the Publix, which is, you know, a great food chain. It's the most popular one in our area. But when Walmart moved in, quite frankly, their lower prices, and it started a kind of a bit of a price war competition. And of course, who benefits? Well, the consumer benefits, right?
That's exactly the way it's supposed to work. Walmart has had success in the food business precisely because they bring the competition and they bring the quality products. People have a choice in virtually all situations to buy groceries, even if it means driving a little farther. But people choose to go to Walmart. Sometimes people choose to go to Walmart even though the Walmart is farther.
That's true.
It's cheaper.
Yes. Aloysius Hogan, he specializes in a wide spectrum of labor issues. And Aloysius, just on a personal note, you've orchestrated the enactment of numerous provisions of law, according to the bio here. Do you mind? Do you mind flapping your wings a little bit about that?
Well, I'll mention just one fun one, which is when I was working for a congressman from the Detroit area, Congressman Joe Nolenberg. Since we're talking about food, Sweet and Low used to, as you may recall, have a warning on the back about saccharin.
Mm-hmm.
And laboratory tests have been found to cause cancer in lab rats. Well, it turns out that lab rats have a different metabolic pathway, completely safe. Saccharin's been used for virtually a millennium, and all the studies came back. And the warning label was put on by Senator Ted Kennedy in the 70s at the height of the emergence of environmentalism. And it turns out that it's completely safe, and there's really no increase in cancer risk, even if you had about 300 tabs. You remember the soft drink tab?
Oh, yes.
Yay. you still wouldn't have any measurable increase in the cancer risk. So that... I wrote a bill that I aptly named the Sweetest Act, Saccharin Warning Elimination, et cetera, et cetera. And it passed in an appropriations bill to take the warning label off the back of saccharin products, including Sweet and Low.
You know, I use that product. I am going to look at the back. It's a little red bag, you know, that you rip open. And
oh, yeah.
I'm going to look for that. I'm going to look at the back of that. The next time I'm at home with my cup of coffee. I really am. I want to look, because I do remember that warning. I didn't realize they had taken it off. That's wonderful.
That's it, yeah.
Now, I mean, we've got so many things going on, and quite frankly, a couple days ago, we had a gentleman on. We were talking a little bit, but I'd like to get your thought on it, too, a little bit about the Volkswagen And the union vote in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the Volkswagen plant, which to many people, surprisingly, went against unionizing. Why, in a nutshell, do you think that those workers decided not to have the United Auto Workers represent them?
Well, there's a good understanding of the perils that the UAW has brought to Detroit, and the unfortunate demise of much of the prosperity of Detroit. And in fact, it has come full circle and led to the loss of many of the people who belong to the union. The union used to have 1.5 million members, and now they're down to 390,000. They've lost 74% of their membership.
Right.
They've kind of brought the house down upon them themselves, unfortunately. So the South does not want to emulate that so much. The South is largely right-to-work states. They embrace a more free market approach that gives the workers the freedom to associate without being coerced into having just one group represent them and paying union dues. And they've seen the experience of Volkswagen itself in Westmoreland, Pennsylvania. It had a union in a unionized shop over at the plant, and it went out of business.
Was it a Volkswagen plant?
Was a Volkswagen
okay,
plant in Pennsylvania,
gotcha.
And was devastating. A number of suicides related to people and the depression.
Really?
A lot of hardship associated with it. And the tactics, again, are kind of interesting. It's threats that the unions use. They threaten to boycott if the company doesn't agree to remain neutral and say nothing.
Yeah.
Their tactic is to have people say nothing, people who would oppose the union. Instead,
mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. No, I want you to finish your thought. I just was going to say, Volkswagen itself didn't stand in the way. It almost promoted the vote, did it not? I mean, they were happy to let the people decide there. They didn't seem to put any pressure against the UAW, as I read the story.
You're exactly right. See, what happens is that the UAW works with IG Metall. IG Metall is the union in Germany, and it gins up the union in Germany to gin up the corporation to not oppose unionization in the U.S. So you have the foreign influence. And then now they have a workers' council in Germany. They have a situation where half of it is union and half of it is management. And the council has to agree to any new plants and any closures of plants. And they're talking now about the union. Half of the council just today and yesterday evening, they're talking about not allowing a new plant to be built in the U.S. They're talking about building another plant, and Chattanooga would love to have it. In fact, the mayor of Chattanooga and the mayor of the county went over to Germany and pitched them to bring it to Chattanooga. Well, now the union is saying, oh, because you didn't vote in a union, we're going to boycott allowing a new plant to be built.
Isn't that interesting? So the Volkswagen headquarters in Germany is almost putting pressure on their plants to go union just because they can threaten to pull away business because of the influence of the organization in Germany. Wow.
That's exactly right. So you have outside, you have foreign influence of an outside union, and keep in mind that the UAW doesn't represent these people. The UAW itself is an outside force, whereas they're claiming, oh, boy, these outside forces, such as the Competitive Enterprise Institute, worked against unionization. Now they're the outside force. They've always been the outside force, and they're given unfettered access, as you pointed out, by the company to proselytize the employees.
We're talking with Aloysius Hogan. He's graciously consented to join us here and talk a little bit about some of the different labor issues that are going on. He is with the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. You know, Aloysius, I'm ambivalent about unions. I mean, initially, when you look back at the history of the workers that, you know, before the unions came along, there was abuse. And so people have a right to organize, get together and, you know, say, look, we all feel that we're being maybe mistreated and we would like these things to occur or we're not going to stay with you, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, we can all relate to that, right? And so over the years, the unions had a positive reputation, but just like any other organization, corruption always seeps in. And we have all of the problems with unions, the people themselves that are in the unions, the graft, the extortion, the you know, the crime. And so now, you know, unions have gotten, and then when they leave places like, I know I'm into a soliloquy here, but when they leave places like Detroit, then everybody gets scared about what the heck are these unions doing that it's basically bankrupted a big city. So, I mean, from the standpoint of unions themselves just standing alone, are they not, for society, are they not a positive in many ways?
Well, you're talking about two different situations. One, there's certainly freedom of association, and if people want to join a union, so be it. However, there are private unions and there are government unions, and government unions is a whole other story. But even in the private unions, what has happened, and it's a pendulum that you're talking about there. There was a need and a place at the beginning, but what has happened is that a lot of their concerns, safety concerns, for example, have been supplanted. They used to have to bargain for that sort of safety concern, but now there are so many laws and safety laws in the Department of Labor, in the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the Mining Safety and Health Administration. All these things have become regulated and legislated, and they are taken care of and are not needed to be bargained over anymore. So a lot of the bargaining ends up going into pensions, and it turns out that a lot of the pensions are unsustainable, both at the government level and private industry level, and the pensions are underfunded. There's a huge problem with underfunding of pensions
Yes.
in the United States.
Yes, I know. From my home state, my former home state of Illinois, and a horrible situation going on there, and California and many of the others, it seems like unions have turned into just something to pull more cash from the from management, from the companies themselves, and that's virtually the only thing that they were doing for the workers.
Yeah, another problem is that the administration, it's really the federal laws that have become an obstacle. The National Labor Relations Board, for example, has proposed a rule termed ambush elections, where 10 days after an election is called for, you'd have to hold it. And that's not enough time to educate people about the issues. UAW in Chattanooga had years to push unionization and to reach out to all the workers, and we're only talking about a couple thousand workers, really. And they had plenty of time to give individual attention and explain the issues. Well, now they want to be able to have all that time and then all of a sudden only give 10 days to anybody who would educate people on the other side of the issue. Really what they want to do is silence any opposition through lack of time, lack of access, and criticism and threats. And that's their tactic these days. And it's become a factor of the federal law tilting under the Obama administration the playing field in favor of unions.
Aloysius, I want to thank you so very much for taking all the time that you did. I've thrown a whole different bunch of curveballs at you with different labor issues. But Aloysius Hogan, again, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Aloysius, if people would like to find out a little bit more about what you do or the institute itself, what do you suggest?
We have a website on our labor issues, workplacechoice.org. We also have CEI.org, which is our main website. We have a brand new logo, as a matter of fact. I encourage people to go there.
I noticed that.
And I tweet myself. My Twitter account is at Hogan, CEI. As I say, I've got a brother in Bradenton and aunt in Venice, and enjoy going down to whenever I can.
I bet you make quite a few trips. You've always got an excuse to come down. Well, thanks very much, Aloysius. Look forward to talking with you again down the road.
Yes, Paul, keep it up. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. Aloysius Hogan. Going to take a short break, my friends. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Walter Williams, socialism, and deceit. So don't go away.
Good Thursday morning. This is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Here are the news headlines for vacationing Canadians. Across Canada today, it's all Olympic hockey talk all the time. Election rumors in Ontario, debate over the budget in British Columbia, and another nasty storm in southern Ontario. All of those stories and more, please join me for Canada Calling. For 60 years, a daily update of Canadian news.
Here's Downtown Dave for the Bay Area Renaissance Festival.
Hey, Tampa Bay, it's time for the 2014 Bay Area Renaissance Festival. It all starts this Saturday at 10 a.m. at Mosi in New Tampa, and it runs weekends until April 8th. The festival is open weekends from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and features 7 themed weekends, 12 entertainment stages, more than 100 artisan booths for fabulous shopping. Also see armored jousting and have great food and drink. Make plans now to attend the 2014 Bay Area Renaissance Festival, starting this Saturday at 10 a.m. The festival is located at Mosi, 46th Street in Fowler in New Tampa. Remember, parking is always free at the festival. It all starts this Saturday at 10 a.m. Be there for food, fun, and entertainment. That's the 2014 Bay Area Renaissance Festival, starting Saturday at 10 a.m. at Mosi.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Of all the queens that ever lived, I choose you to rule me, my Rosemary.
Slim Whitman. Boy, we need you now more than ever, Slim. I can tell you that. Well, we're back. Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy, and one of the guests we have had on Freedom Works some time back was Walter Williams. Walter Williams from George Mason University, wonderful black conservative. And he wrote for townhall.com, Town Hall being a conservative website, political opinion-wise. Something that I thought was worth talking a little about, because he takes a look at what he calls concealing evil when it comes to socialism and the idea of helping groups of people in need. So if I might, I'm going to take the liberty of quoting from what Walter wrote. He says that evil acts are given an aura of moral legitimacy by noble-sounding socialistic expressions like spreading the wealth, income redistribution, caring for the less fortunate, and the will of the majority. So he says, let's have a thought experiment to consider just how much Americans sanction evil. He says, imagine that there are several elderly widows in your neighborhood. They have neither the strength to mow their lawn, clean their window, perform other household things, nor do they have the financial means to hire somebody else to do it for them. So, would you support a government mandate that would force you or one of your neighbors to mow her lawn, to clean her windows, and to go inside and perform other tasks for her? A government mandate on that. Moreover, if the person so ordered to do that work failed to show up, would you approve of some sort of a penalty for that person for not showing up? Fines, imprisonment, you know, whatever. So that's how Walter Williams looks at the concept of socialism. He said, would there be the same condemnation if instead of forcing you or your neighbor to actually perform weekly tasks for the elderly widows on your street, the government forced you or your neighbor to give one of the widows $50 of your weekly take-home pay so that she could go ahead and hire people to do that work? Would such a mandate differ from the one under which you would be forced to go over there and do the work yourself? Well, Walter Williams says, I'd answer there's little difference between the two concepts. In either case, one person is being forcibly used to serve the purpose of somebody else. And that is what socialism is all about. Taking money from you for the so-called good of other people. And it's never worked. It's never worked in any country over any period of time. It works for a while. It works when you only have a certain number of people in that culture that need your help. It'll work then. But when more and more and more people move into the, let's say, the neighborhood that need help, it means that they got to take more and more and more and more of your money to help the people. And ultimately, that will not work. And what happens, not only do you lose money, but you start to resent the fact that these other people are getting part of your money. So socialism becomes a behavioral problem as well as an economic problem. And Walter Williams goes on to, you know, talk further about some of these things. He says, this is really why socialism is evil. It employs evil means. Confiscation of your money and intimidation if you don't pay up to accomplish what are often seen as noble goals. Namely, you're helping somebody else, you know, one's fellow man. And helping one's fellow man by reaching into somebody else's pockets to do so seems to be laudable and praiseworthy. Now, if you reach into your own pocket to help somebody, that is laudable and praiseworthy. When you go and you, of your own volition, give the guy money or time to help him. But when you reach into somebody else's pocket, that's the evil, according to Walter Williams. And he says it's worthy of condemnation. Now, he goes on to say that tragically, most teachings, even from churches, support government use of one person to serve the purposes of another. The advocates cringe from calling it intimidation and prefer to call it charity or duty. Now, some might argue, Williams goes on to say, that we are a democracy in which the majority rules. But does a majority consensus make moral acts that would otherwise be deemed immoral? In other words, if the neighbors got a majority vote to force one of their number under the pain of punishment to perform those tasks for that widow, would that make it moral? See, that's the thing. Even though most people seem to say, yeah, we want to help all of these downtrodden, the poor, whatever, does it make it moral? Well, apparently Walter Williams feels, as do I, that it does not. And there is a difference. Majority and morality can be two different things. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, among other things, we're going to tell you the freest presses in the world. Don't go away.
I drove a herd of cattle down from old Nebraska way. That's how I come to be in the state of Iowa. I met a gal in Iowa. Her eyes were big and blue. I asked her what her name was. She said Sioux City Sue. Sioux City Sue. I'd swap my horse and dog for you, Sioux City Sue. There ain't no gal so true as my sweet Sioux City Sue.
I'm us in the morning. Morning.
Please welcome now to the Iverson in the Morning program, former Beatle Ringo Starr. Morning, Ringo.
Well, sit on me Facebook and tell me that you love me. I haven't seen a stock fail like that since the Maharishi tried to open a chain of hamburger restaurants in Calcutta. I knew those shares were going to go down quicker than Joseph Abood on Betty Davis Night at the Ramrod, but I haven't been this happy since Michael Jackson stole the rights to Yesterday. Should have been a rubber glove, not sequins, the way Jacko gave Paulie a prostate massage on that one. But in the long run, it ultimately doesn't make that much difference, even if Facebook drops so low it's not even worth wiping your bum with it. Zuckerberg will still have enough money left in his couch cushions to finance a space program. Paul will still own the publishing to Wipeout by the Safaris and get a check every time somebody flushes a toilet. But there's still a chance for growth, and you can increase your chances for growth with Extigen Male Enhancement Tablets. Give your woman a long and winding road to sexual satisfaction.
You're selling male enhancement products?
Catch Imus in the Morning right here.
You don't need to know how to skate. It's not necessary for you to be capable of stick handling. Or sacrificing your body to fight for a puck in the corner. Or even one-timing a slap shot. You don't need to know how to do any of these things to help this team win. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
Renew your Lightning season tickets to secure playoff priority seating at BeTheThunder.com.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for joining us today. A little earlier, when we were talking with Aloysius Hogan, he talked about the fact that he got some legislation, he helped get some legislation passed that took away those warning labels, you know, those warning labels on saccharin packets. About, you know, be careful about using saccharin, it can cause cancer. Well, he was involved in getting that off because they found out, indeed, you would probably pretty much have to dive with your mouth open into a mill full of saccharin and continue to consume it. You'd probably die from suffocation before you would die of cancer. However, a California state senator now wants to make his state the very first in the nation to require warning labels on anything pretty much with sugar on it. Can you imagine everything that has sugar on it and you'd have to have a warning label?
That's about everything in the store.
Pretty much.
It's about half, third or half, literally half the store in the store.
And there are things that have sugar in it you may not even realize have sugar in it.
And I'm so happy to hear about the saccharin because I consume mass quantities of
it. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put it in my coffee all the time.
Me too.
I also put it on my cat's tail.
Oh.
It helps with growth. It really does. It's great.
Your cat, you go through a lot of cats?
Yeah, I just buried another one 2 weeks ago. I don't think it has anything to do with that. Maybe it does.
It's not saccharin. Because they probably lick it off as soon as you put it on.
Yeah, the other cat does. I got two cats.
Two cats.
Yeah.
I got it. That sounds kind of fun. I should try that saccharin thing, you know, put it on. I'll ask my girlfriend.
You should. In the meantime, this guy wants to put warning labels. He wants to start out by putting it on all beverages, anything with sugar in it. And he's a Democrat. His name is Senator William Monning. And his bill, which was proposed today, would require the warning on the front of all beverage containers with added sweeteners that have 75 or more calories in every 12 ounces. The warning would say, State of California safety warning, drinking beverages with added sugar contributes to obesity, diabetes, and tooth decay. Now, you know, it may indeed contribute to all of those. In fact, I think it probably does. But that's like saying, do not jump off the cliff because there's a chance you could be hurt in your 1,000-foot fall. Everybody knows this already, so you don't necessarily have to say that. But Moaning says there's overwhelming research showing the link between sugary drinks and those particular health problems. He says when the science is this conclusive, the state of California has a responsibility to take steps to protect consumers. So I would suspect that if we start with all of the liquids that have sugar in them, any beverage, it will eventually move on to the food products, and everything almost would have. I'm waiting for that little sticker to be under an electric light switch. Warning. touching this electric light switch, which will turn on the light, which will allow you to find that candy bar, which is seated over in the corner of the counter, can help contribute to your diabetes, obesity, or heart attack problems.
Yeah, I
don't you see where I'm going with this?
Absolutely, yeah, because I've got a I've got a sign on the ceiling, you know, like right over my bed. It says, warning. You know, getting out of bed
could contribute to your death.
It's dangerous out there. Think twice before getting out of bed.
I like it
in the morning because it could be fatal.
What a perfect reason to stay in bed and do nothing.
Absolutely.
You know, and just think of everybody stayed in bed and did nothing.
It'd be a lot better world.
Be a better off world now that I think about it. It's better to do nothing than something. The nothings. outweigh the somethings, I think, in terms of the common good. Now, that's just my own opinion. I could be wrong, but probably not.
I would concur.
Well, we're going to, in just a moment, I'm going to give you the top 10 countries for press freedom. But before I do, I found a story this morning. The Federal Communications Commission in Washington want to be able to send researchers into different media newsrooms across the country and check to see what kind of coverage these newsrooms are affording their listening or reading public. And that doesn't sound too good to me. They're going to take that information and do what with it? You know, why do you need this information? And here's one guy, Mike Cavender of the Radio Television Digital News Association. He says, where this idea really needs to go is into the trash heap. Now, the FCC is drawing all kinds of ire from the free press, you know, to do studying of critical information needs in newsrooms. I mean, what do you need to know to worry about that kind of thing? GOP lawmakers have warned the program essentially would become the Fairness Doctrine 2.0. You remember the Fairness Doctrine, Lee?
Vaguely, yes.
I mean, nobody could honor the Fairness Doctrine, but what it meant was if I brought somebody in, a conservative, onto the show, or I made a statement in a conservative way, I would have to provide equal time for a liberal, for the other point of view. It was completely impossible to follow through on. It was ridiculous. And this is the same kind of thing here. So, again, they're calling it, Republicans are calling it, this idea Fairness Doctrine 2.0. Very, very interesting. Well, if Ringo Starr, who we heard from on the Imus show just a few minutes ago, if he's ready to do a drum roll for us, we are now going. Ringo's sobering up. We're sobering him up to bring him to the drums. What we're going to do here is give you. According to, by the way, this is from Reporters Without Borders that have come up with this top 10 list. The top 10 countries in the world for press freedom. Are we ready, Ringo?
He's not in very good shape, but he'll give it his
best. He'll give it a go. Okay, number 10 country. Sweden. Yeah, Sweden indeed is number 10 in press freedom. Number 9. New Zealand. I don't know why New Zealand would be number 9 on this thing. I don't see Australia on the list, but New Zealand makes it. You know, New Zealand is just south of. Have you ever been there?
No. Island or whatever.
Yeah, a little large island. Just,
they're off to themselves.
It's a country unto itself, but it's a large island just south of Australia. Number 8, we go north.
Oops. Ringo.
And Ringo falls asleep on the drum. But number 8 is Iceland. Iceland.
Again, a great country.
It is a great country.
You know, you could do
wonderful people. Yeah. I can't spell the capital Reykjavik, but I can pronounce it correctly, and therefore,
I think it's Reykjavik.
Reykjavik. Well, now you're ruined. I can't even pronounce it correctly.
Now you can.
Number 7 is close by, Denmark.
Another wonderful country.
Another Nordic
Except
country.
They're very socialized, apparently.
Yes, they are, and so is Sweden, and Iceland, and Denmark.
These are all, and I'll tell you, I can see a trend happening here.
Yeah.
And I didn't peek, but You're going to say maybe Finland and maybe Norway.
You're nailing it.
Ireland.
You're ruining the surprise. No.
I know. That's well. I like to do that.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Number six. You wouldn't have picked this one, Liechtenstein. Liechtenstein, which is no bigger than Rhode Island, and I don't even know where it is. I think it's somewhere near Germany, but then they moved it to some other part of the world. But Liechtenstein is number six.
They actually moved the country.
Yes, they did. Number five. I don't know where this is either. Andorra? But number five country for press freedom is Andorra. The only problem is it's so small.
Yeah,
they don't really have a
circulation.
They don't have a printing press. They have a comic book they publish, though. Number four, Luxembourg.
Oh, again.
Luxembourg, indeed.
Great.
You're right. I think you may have mentioned it, but Luxembourg.
No, I didn't.
You didn't. All right. This one you mentioned, number three, Norway. We're back up north. Number
America's
three.
Not on the list.
Well, we're going to tell you in a second. Number two, Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. Netherlands. And number one, you did mention, Lee, the number one country for press freedom, Finland.
Yay.
So Norway, Finland, and Denmark are all up there together, you know, and they're all up there for number 46, United States.
See, I told you.
And that calls for a yodel, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye for now.
I asked her if she had a boat. Said, yeah, quite a few. Then I started courting my sweet Sioux City Sue. The first time that I stole a kiss, I called her stealing too. I asked her if she loved me. She said, indeed I do.